God, I don't know who else to turn to.
I am so lost. This feels
so hopeless.
Oh, God, would you come and rescue me from this mountain I'm facing?
This cancer diagnosis.
This situation at work.
The anxiety
is so great.
My child is so far
from
me.
It's too hard to forgive.
It's too hard to forgive.
Our marriage.
My finances.
It seems so hopeless. So out of control.
But God,
you say, they who wait for you shall renew their strength.
So Lord,
I will wait.
I will trust that you are at work in this situation.
And even when I don't see it. Help me to know that you are working all things for good.
Because you are good.
Because you are good.
Hey, welcome to Calvary this weekend, and if you're wondering about my hair, that means that you either do not have a student in extreme, or you didn't kind of watch us on Facebook Live on Thursday night, and all I'll say is I am so glad that my son Jake is a pastor and not a barber, but it was all in good fun for a good cause on Extreme last week, and I'm coming to you this weekend from the wonderful Valley of Penn. I came to see all my friends here at Penn's Valley, but all over Central PA. It's another shelter-in-place weekend, so Pastor Vince was kind enough to brave the weather, brave the corona, and come down to this what used to be beautiful recording studio, and now is a beautiful church, and just share a bit of what's going on in Penn's Valley. So, hey Vince, I'll move out of the way, and you share a little bit with us.
Welcome to Calvary Penn's Valley. We're glad you could be here in our building this weekend. There is so much good stuff happening in Penn's Valley. This last week, I've had so many people respond to emails that were just asking me how they could serve in our community. What kind of needs am I hearing about? And fortunately, we haven't heard about a lot of needs, but this last week that has started to increase. I heard about a teenager who is the only one in his family that is working right now and trying to pay the bills for the rest of the household. I'm also hearing folks here at Calvary Penn's Valley, they're making face masks for their friends and folks in the community and a few other organizations. And I had the privilege this week of being able to go to the YMCA and Spring Mills, where we were able to pack food and hand out some food. And a lot of that, again, Calvary is making donations through the Community Relief Fund to the YMCA to be able to feed those hungry folks. So thanks to all the folks here at Calvary Penn's Valley and the other community members that are serving. I love what our school district is doing. There's a few committed folks, employees of the district that are delivering food to every household that has children that have registered here in Penn's Valley. So our kids are not going hungry, and we just love the way the community has pulled together in so many different ways. A lot of hard stuff happening too. I had a stark reminder last night of one of the folks that attends here at Calvary, Penn's Valley, that is a first responder with the fire company, and an Amish boy was hit by a car and killed last night. You may have seen that in the paper. And I'm reminded of how many of our folks are still serving, whether it be in the hospitals or through the fire company. And that's just hard stuff as they have to deal with those losses. And one other story, this morning I was at the grocery store pumping my gas, and one of the gals that attends our church showed up, and she had lost her sister to cancer a couple of weeks ago. And just kind of grieving that fact that she can't be with her parents, she couldn't say goodbye to her sister. And right now is just a great time when the church has been able to like walk into those people's lives by just loving them, calling them, praying for them, and offering skin of Jesus and just being able to love them well. I received an email from somebody that I just asked this week how I could pray. This person was one of about four or five folks that are self-proclaimed agnostics that have attended Calvary Penn's Valley this last year. And the reason that they said they came to church is because the people here love them and they know that this is a church without walls. This gal sent me an email about some things that are happening in her life, and I had asked how I could pray, and her response was, you know, I don't know that I even believe in this prayer stuff, but here's some things that you could be praying for if it worked. But in that email, she also mentioned three people that attend the church. And she said, these folks have just loved me well. They've reached out to me. They've served me in so many ways. And it speaks volumes of how your church really lives out that thing of being a church without walls. So thanks to those of you here at Calvary Penns Valley that are loving your neighbors well. You're doing front yard missions well. And I know that's happening Calvary-wide. And we're so glad that we could just tell you a little bit of what's happening here in Calvary, Penns Valley. So looking forward to what Dan has to say as he preaches here this morning.
Thank you so much, Vince, man. It is great to be out here. It's great to be a part of the Calvary family. You know, last weekend, best we could tell, we had probably somewhere over 3,000 people, adults and kids, connecting with us to celebrate the resurrection. You invited your friends and family from all over Pennsylvania, all over the United States, even at different places around the world. And, you know, on Easter morning, as I was getting up, I was praying, I just had this thought. What if, because of a world that is in so much need of hope, and what if, because of a church being forced to get out of all of its facilities, its buildings, and just kind of saturate the internet on the weekend, that the weekend that we most love going to church, what if perhaps never before in the history of the world have so many people heard about Jesus, heard the gospel in one 24-hour period of time? I'm telling you, God is up to something. And there is no family, there's no team, there's no part of the body of Christ that I would rather be on this journey with than you. We're focusing two more weekends on this series, The Edge of Breakthrough, and next weekend we're going to share some breakthrough stories, and then in May we're going to start a new series called What in the World is God Doing? What in the World is God Doing? But I want to warn you, even before we enter into that series, it's going to be a lot less about answers, because oftentimes when we're seeking answers, we're seeking control, and it's going to be a lot more about the journey. How do we get to the place where God wants us to be? But we couldn't leave the edge of breakthrough without pondering the story of Peter. You know, there are few people who experienced more breakthrough than Peter. And we find from his story, like Peter, we can't experience breakthrough without failure. We can't experience breakthrough without failure. There's no resurrection without some tomb time. Tombstones always come before stepping stones, if you were with us last weekend. So I want you to turn to John chapter 21. We're going to actually look at a few places from John 13 to John 21, but mostly in John 21. And I want to start out with a tombstone story, or two or three. One of my favorites, you've heard this one before. While Jarrett was growing up, his mother used to collect these very cool, very blue, very expensive plates. And a new one would come out every year. And she had a collection dating back to 1968. They were her pride and joy. And they hung on the wall with these little special holders. They were beautifully arranged for everybody to see near the door leading into the dining room. Well, one day, Jarrett decided to show his mom how he had taught his dog, Elvis, how to play tag. And Elvis wasn't supposed to be in the house at all, wasn't a house dog, but Jarrett brought him in for the tag demonstration, and it was a good game. Elvis was a fierce competitor. He could handle those corners like a Porsche, and at one point, Jarrett was gaining on Elvis, but rounding the corner from the dining room to the kitchen, he misjudged the turn, and he hit the wall. He writes, "It stopped me long enough to turn around and catch the look on my mom's face as six of her collector plates freed themselves from the wall and committed plate suicide. They broke into hundreds of pieces. Mom was crushed," he said, "and I felt horrible." Maybe that's your tombstone story. Somewhere along the way, you misjudged the turn, hit a wall, and now the broken fragments of life just lay all around you. Maybe it wasn't even your life. You broke somebody else's life. And now there's just all kinds of brokenness and regret, maybe even shame. It's a tombstone story. My grandpa John, we called him Big Grandpa, he got polio when he was young, and it left him somewhat crippled up. And every memory that I have of him includes a cane. He had one of those, you know, canes with a little hook on the top, and he couldn't get around very fast or very well, but man, he knew how to use that cane. If he wanted us or we were doing something wrong, he'd reach out and grab you around the leg or sometimes, you know, even around the neck. And he also knew how to tell a story. I loved his stories. I remember going out to the trailer, you know, before school. He lived on our farm, and I'd sit with him and wait for the bus to come. And I was probably 7 or 8. My grandfather introduced me to coffee. He was my supplier for many years, and he'd tell me stories. And most of them were stories of adventure, stories of the road, following the harvest, riding the rails, meals with hobos, adventure. And you know, as a young boy, there just wasn't much better than Grandpa's stories. He loved the adventure of the road, but his crippled leg, and later I would understand even more so his crippled heart, often kept him from the adventure. That was his tombstone story. Maybe you can relate to that. A heart that desires an adventure with God, but you just feel kind of crippled inside. Jeannie Stevens' tombstone story started her sophomore year in college. A guy that she was dating and really liked spoke some words into her life that put her in a tomb. He said, "Jeannie, I really like you. You're so much fun. You have a great personality. You even love Jesus, but you just aren't physically what I'm looking for." And he went on to tell her that she wasn't pretty enough or tall enough or thin enough for him. She says, I remember that day like it was yesterday. And it really hurt. I immediately went up into my room. I changed into my workout clothes and I went to the gym. And on the treadmill, through tears and anger, I began to chart my course for how I was going to become enough. Maybe your tombstone story is a not enough story. No matter what you get on, no matter what you got on the outside or the inside, you're always afraid that it's not enough. Not good enough, not smart enough, not funny or pretty enough, just never enough. Always something missing. So Peter was a guy who experienced as much breakthrough as anyone in the Bible, but he was also a guy who went through trouble. I mean, all through his life, there were these moments of trouble, of failure, of difficulty, of speaking before he thought, of acting before he thought, but broken fragments of life and crippled heart and feeling like he wasn't enough, that was part of Peter's tombstone story. I mean, think about this. He walked on water. He was in Jesus' inner circle. And that night, that Thursday night when they were all there celebrating the, celebrating the Palm Sunday story, the Palm Sunday celebration, you know, before supper was even over, it says in John 13 that Jesus turned kind of serious. And he said, tonight some of you here will betray me. And instantly there's this quiet confusion, anger, kind of sadness around the table. They'd finished eating, and Jesus led them to the Mount of Olives, and it's just outside the city. And Matthew tells us that Jesus said to them, "Tonight, because of what happens, you'll all abandon me." And Peter responds, "Never, never, not me, Lord. Even if everybody else falls away, even if everybody else runs, even if everybody else fails you, not me. Not me. I would rather die." He said in verses 37 and 38 of John 13, "I'm ready to die for you." And Jesus answered to Peter, "Die for me. I tell you the truth, Peter, before the rooster crows tomorrow morning, you will deny me 3 times. You'll deny that you even know me 3 times. Now don't miss this. This is really important. Jesus knew. Jesus knew that Peter would fail. He knows that I'm going to fail. In fact, just whisper this to yourself wherever you're sitting. Jesus knows I'll fail. I mean, how well do we actually do with that truth? We have this massive blind spot that psychologists call the self-serving bias. For example, 800,000 high school students were asked the question if they were above or below average in their social skills. You know, if they all got it right, it should have split somewhat 50-50, right? Guess how many of them rated themselves below average in social skills? 0%. In fact, 25% of them rated themselves in the top 1%. A U.S. News and World Report survey once asked people, who do you think is likely to get into heaven? This was back in 1997, but you'll recognize at least a few of the names. They were given a choice of seven different people. Michael Jordan got 65%. I guess they thought God is a basketball fan. Oprah got 66%. 79% gave the thumbs up to Mother Teresa. But guess who in everybody's name was most likely, number one most likely to get into heaven? Me. Not me. The person filling out the survey. That was one of the choices. The top choice was the person completing the survey. Apparently, most of the people during the survey thought Mother Teresa, she's got a pretty good chance of getting into heaven. In fact, there's only one person in the world I can think of who has a better chance of getting into heaven than Mother Teresa, and that's me. Listen to me. You're not that good. And I'm even worse. We're going to fail Jesus. I can't even count the number of times that I failed Jesus. At times I failed him because my heart was rebellious and I wanted what I wanted when I wanted it. At times I failed him because I just tried to satisfy my heart, my soul through substitute satisfactions. I didn't treasure Christ. Remember Peter's tombstone story. They go to Gethsemane, and Jesus prays, and Peter falls asleep. Judas arrives with his army. Peter cuts off some guy's ear. Jesus has to stop and heal it, and then Peter runs. But to his credit, he followed at a distance to the house of Caiaphas. And then his three denials came. He sat in the courtyard, warming himself by the fire, a charcoal fire. While every bad thing in the world starts to happen to Jesus, Peter's trying to look inconspicuous. Until this little servant girl came up to him and said, I know you. You were with Jesus. Don't know what you're talking about, Peter said. Be quiet. I don't even know him. Denial, betrayal, number one. Number two and number three actually come quickly in succession. John details them in John chapter 18, verses 25 through 27. It says, as Simon Peter was standing by the fire warming himself, they asked him again, you're not one of his disciples, are you? He denied it, saying, no, I'm not. But then one of the household slaves, actually a relative of the man whose ear Peter had cut off, asked, didn't I see you out there in the olive grove with Jesus? And again, Peter denied it, and immediately a rooster crowed. Luke adds this difficult detail to this moment of failure in Luke 22, verses 61 and 62. It says, at that moment, the moment that the rooster crowed, at that moment, the Lord turned and he looked at Peter. The Lord's in the house. The Lord turned and looked out into the courtyard at Peter, and it says suddenly, so I believe that Peter saw him, their eyes met. Suddenly, it says, the Lord's words flashed through Peter's mind. When the Lord looked at Peter, the Lord's words flashed through Peter's mind, it says in 61, 62, before the rooster crows tomorrow morning, you'll deny three times that you even know me. And it says that Peter left the courtyard weeping bitterly. And that grabs my heart. I mean, can you imagine that gut punch, heart wrenching moment as your eyes meet Jesus' eyes? I mean, not only did you break a promise, you crapped out on a commitment. But honestly, it's not even that. He's your best friend. I mean, there's nobody in the world that you would rather be like than Jesus. And in his most difficult moment, you couldn't even admit that you knew him. And so you leave the courtyard weeping bitterly. Broken fragments of life all around him. Crippled heart. Just not enough. Not enough. Not courageous enough. Not committed enough. Not passionate enough. That was Thursday night, and Friday, Jesus suffered and was crucified. You know the story. He died and was laid in a tomb, but I'm telling you, Peter went into his tomb the moment their eyes met. All of his props and supports are left at the entrance. All of his hopes and dreams are laid to rest. The tomb shreds every mask that we try to put on. All your good is gone. And that's the tomb. And some of you are in a tomb right now, looking at this last flicker of light as the Corona stone rolls closed. Listen, nobody gets through life without tomb time. And you understand that moment. Don't diminish it in any way, shape, or form. That failure for Peter was not a small thing. It was like a husband committing adultery, or a policeman robbing a bank, or a mother abusing her children. Listen, I don't care what the failure is. I've been talking to and praying for a young man who has walked down the path of failure so long. The bottom of the pit seems so dark and deep, but 2 weeks ago he turned. Why? I think because he came to believe what I believe so deeply in my heart, that my failures are not fatal. Your failures are not fatal. In fact, God does some of his best work in the darkest of tombs. You know, it's a mystery that I do not fully understand, but a reality that I frequently experience, that at my worst, when my capacities and competencies are publicly even broken, and I find that the only thing I bring to the table is my complete desperate dependence on God, in those tomb times when all of our pretenses and all of our excuses and all of our false pictures of our own abilities are stripped away, in those times when my hands are so empty and all I have is God, it's like God shows up and does some of his best work in the darkest of tombs. I mean, just take a moment and think back on your own story or the stories of others. Think back on the times when you or others you know have gone through great spiritual growth or personal or even relational growth, right? I mean, remember those times in your life when God showed up in a deep way, deep ways he shaped your heart to be more like Jesus. Those seasons when you developed this deep hope that no matter what happens, the best is yet to come. I mean, have you ever noticed how often those times include a tombstone story? A time of suffering or hardship, a time of confusion or pain or difficulty. I mean, tomb time so often catalyzes our growth. Tomb times are those times when hearts get the shaping chisel and hope is planted deep, places where we find God's resurrection power simply because we desperately need God's resurrection power. There's no resurrection without a tomb. The story that God is writing goes from tombstones to stepping stones. Tombstones come first before stepping stones. On Thursday, Peter denied Jesus. On Friday, Jesus was laid in his tomb. On Sunday, Jesus walks out of the tomb. John 21 is days, maybe even weeks later. And I'm telling you, Peter still hasn't come out. Peter's still doing tomb time. Peter knows that Jesus is alive in this moment in John 21. Peter doesn't know if his friendship with Jesus will ever be the same. I said I'd give him my life. I couldn't even give him my words. How could he want me to be his disciple now? I can't be like him. Look at his courage. I'm a coward. Look at his passion. My heart is crippled. I'll never be enough. I don't have what it takes to follow or to be like Jesus. Let me put a thought in your mind that we'll come back to in our next series, What in the World is God Doing? See, we think of tombs as periods, as endings, as final pages of the story, but for God, every tomb is a transition. I mean, think of the amazing global transition that started in Jesus' tomb. God reset the world, and life has never been the same. But in the midst of the transition, because we can't see what is to come and we can't truly grasp all that God is doing in us, we want to get out of that transition as quickly as we can. We can't wait for everything to get back to normal. And so what do the disciples do? They go fishing. Look at John 21, verses 3 through 5. Peter said, "I'm going fishing." "We'll come too," they all said. So they went out in the boat, but they caught nothing all night. And at dawn, Jesus, they don't know it's Jesus, but Jesus is standing on the beach. The disciples couldn't see who he was. And he called out, friends, or literally he calls out children, "Have you caught any fish?" "No," they replied. "I'm going back to what I know." That's what's in Peter's mind. "Can't wait for life to get back to normal. I'm going fishing, getting rid of my mask. Can't wait to go to work. Can't wait till we gather again. When are we going to eat at Waffle Shop and go to a stinking Penn State football game? I just want to go to church and send my kids back to school. I don't know what's ahead, so can we just go back to normal?" See, we have this amazing compulsion. We have this amazing capacity to return to normal, even when normal is a tomb. But what if Jesus is inviting us to something new? A personal reset, maybe even a global reset that will catalyze growth and spur us on to a new chapter. You know, in at least some areas, can we decide together that we will not go back to normal? We'll go forward with Christ. They've gone fishing, a bunch of them. They've already seen Jesus, but just now and then, and not every day, and nobody really knows what's up. Life is still uncertain, and the future is kind of hazy, but we know fishing. Fishing is what we did before all of this craziness. Let's go fishing back to our lake that we love and our boat that we love. They're heading back to normal and comfortable and familiar. They fished through the night, and they caught nothing, but sometimes failure is such a gift. It's almost morning. They're headed in about 100 yards away. A guy on the beach yells, "Catch anything?" Empty hands go back. The stranger yells back in verses 6 and 7, "Why don't you throw out your net on the right-hand side of the boat, and you'll get some then." And so they did, and they couldn't haul in the net because there were so many fish in it. And then the disciple that Jesus loved looked to Peter and said, "It's the Lord." And when Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, he jumped into the water. The disciples look at each other and they're just thinking, this seems way too familiar. In fact, later on, read Mark chapter 1 and you'll realize that in this moment, Jesus is setting them up. He's reminding them of their first meeting. They throw the nets on the other side and the nets are bursting. John looks at Peter. It's Jesus. Peter jumps out of the boat. He's the first one to shore. Jesus has a campfire going. I love this scene. He's cooking breakfast. Jesus is inviting us to breakfast. Please understand, it's not all business with Jesus. It's not all, "What can you do for me? Let's get to work. The mission is so important. It starts with, come and sit a while. Peter, just come and join me. Let's be together. Let's break bread together." I mean, put yourself there. Dive into Peter's skin, the images that he's re-seeing and the moments he's remembering and the words he's re-hearing. The first time he met Jesus, they were fishing then and they did the whole throw the net on the other side routine and that was the day. That was the day. That was the moment when Jesus said to Peter, "Follow me and I'll make you a fisher of men." Maybe he's remembering other meetings with Jesus in this very same, very familiar spot. He sits there on a rock gazing into the fire and maybe, certainly, he's reminded of a fire in a pit in the courtyard of Caiaphas, a fire that he warmed himself by as he denied that he even knew Jesus on three separate occasions. Jesus breaks off a piece of the bread and he gives it to him. Certainly Peter remembers that Thursday night, the words spoken just before he promised Jesus that he would never deny him. "Peter, this is my body broken for you." They finished breakfast and with everyone gathered around, that's how I picture it, it was time for resurrection. Look at John 21, verses 15 through 17. Here's what it says. After breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, "Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these?" We don't know for sure what the these are. Some people suggest maybe he's asking, "Do you love me more than these other disciples?" I don't think that's what it is. I think it's, "Simon, do you love me more than these fish that you caught? 153 fish, read the story. Do you love me more than fishing? Do you just want to go back to normal? Or do you want to go forward with me?" Simon, do you love me more than these? Yes, Lord, Peter replied. You know I love you. Then feed my lambs, Jesus told him. And then Jesus repeated the question. Simon, son of John, do you love me? Yes, Lord, Peter said. You know I love you. Then take care of my sheep, Jesus said. And once more he asked him, Simon, son of John, do you love me? He says, Peter was grieved that Jesus asked the question a third time. He said, Lord, you know everything. You know I love you. And then Jesus said, feed my sheep. Three times Jesus asked Peter, do you love me? And honestly, I think that's the question that we have to answer in every tomb story that we find ourselves in. That's his question. Do you love me? See, Jesus knows that this is a matter of the heart. That we sin because our hearts are not satisfied with God. Jesus knows that Peter has messed up, and Peter knows that Peter has messed up, and Peter is pretty sure that Peter's going to mess up again, and Jesus would probably agree, but Jesus does not say anything about what Peter did. I mean, Jesus doesn't let out with a cockle-doodle-doo and say, I told you, Peter, I told you. He doesn't even try to work through the steps of what Peter did wrong. Like, Peter, if you just would have prayed a little bit more with us in the Garden of Gethsemane, this wouldn't have happened. Some wonder if Jesus asked the question three times, do you love me, Peter, to remind him of his three denials. And I actually think that's the connection. Three denials, three times the question, do you love me? But not because Jesus wanted to remind Peter of his failure. I think Jesus just wanted Peter to hear his own words in his own ears. Time after time after time affirming, yes, Jesus, I love you. Because in that moment, there was nothing more important than Peter saying, Jesus, you have my heart. So can I ask you this weekend, who has your heart? What has your heart? Who or what do you love? Would the last few weeks of my life, of your life, reflect how much we love Jesus? Listen, while we're all going to fail, the question is, do I love Jesus? And three times Peter responded, yes, Jesus, I love you. And so what does Jesus say then? Look at John 21:19. Then Jesus told him, follow me. That's his invitation. His question is, do you love me? His invitation is, follow me. Please hear those words, follow me, through Peter's ears, spoken from a rabbi to his disciple. Sometimes we hear those words, follow me, as a burden. For Peter, these words were not a difficult command. They were a delightful invitation. They were the words that he longed to hear. His rabbi was saying, Peter, I still believe in you. I chose right when I chose you. I still have faith in you. You have what it takes to become like me. I still want you to walk with me. Follow me. Peter, if you love me, follow me. The invitation still stands. And Peter looked into Jesus' eyes this time. What he saw was that no failure is fatal. And can I tell you what I believe now? I haven't always believed this, but started re-seeing and rethinking this story over a year or so ago as God was leading Lynn through some of her journey of dealing with shame. And she shared with me something she heard and was pondering, that perhaps that was always the way that the eyes of Jesus looked at Peter. That perhaps even in that moment of Peter's three times failure, when the rooster ratted him out and Peter and Jesus' eyes met, that perhaps even then, Jesus' eyes were eyes of hope, not disappointment. I mean, I've always read that story, just picturing this look of intense disappointment that must have crossed Jesus' face as Peter denied him for the third time. But what if Jesus wasn't looking at Peter with disappointment? What if he was looking at him with eyes of delight? What if Jesus was thinking, just hang on, Peter. Only three more days. Just hang on for 3 days. I'm going to change your life, and together we'll change the world. I mean, we even get some sense of that in the Luke story when Jesus says to Peter, Peter, Satan has asked to sift you like wheat, but I've prayed that when you return again, you'll encourage your brothers. Even now, I can hear Jesus saying, listen, you've failed. We've all got broken fragments of life around us. Without Christ, my heart is desperately crippled, and I'm not enough, but he is. And he heals the hearts, and he puts the pieces back together again. And sure, you can still see the cracks, but they testify to the Jesus who loves us enough to put the pieces back together again. And even now, I can hear him say, don't quit. Listen, Calvary, don't quit. If you love me, you're still on the team. Your failure is not fatal, it's forgiven. There are sights left unseen and moments still to be experienced. There are moments to be seized. I'll give you what it takes so that you can become like me. That the people, that they can't help but see me in you. Let your tombstone become a stepping stone, and then go from stepping stone to breakthrough. Let me just close with this moment. I love this picture. In Acts chapter 4, verse 13, this is after the resurrection, after Jesus has gone to heaven, and the Spirit has been poured out, and the church is on the move, filling Jerusalem with the hope and the message of Christ. And the religious authorities, they pull Peter and John in and try to scare the gospel out of them. And these are the same people who hurried Jesus to the cross, and now they're telling Peter and John to stop. They're telling Peter and John to stop loving their neighbor, stop feeding the poor, stop healing people in Jesus' name. They're telling Peter to quit telling people about Jesus, quit sharing the gospel, quit giving hope. And just as an aside, you suppose maybe we can quit worrying quite so much about what we're being told to quit doing, quit going outside, put a mask on. You know, maybe we should stop worrying until they tell us to quit loving our neighbors or quit sharing the gospel or quit telling people about Jesus. I think sometimes we get so concerned with things that matter less than the things we're not even concerned about. So what does Peter do? He starts sharing the gospel with them. And here's their response in verse 13. Now when they saw the boldness of Peter and John and perceived that they were uneducated, common men, they were astonished and they recognized that they had been with Jesus. I love that. I mean, do you understand what a compliment that was for Peter? These men were saying, I see Jesus in you. You have become just like me, Jesus is saying. And I love it because it tells me that it's okay to be ordinary and uneducated as long as I've been with Jesus. I love it because it tells me that if I hang out with Jesus, I'm going to make a difference in the lives of my neighbors. I mean, some of you are thinking right now, there's simply no way God can do anything of significance with you. You beg off every time he extends his hand of partnership because you're just an ordinary person. But are you willing to be with Jesus? If you're willing to be with Jesus, people will see Jesus in you. Being with Jesus is going to look different for each and every one of us. Some of you are going to need to learn to see Jesus in your kids because that's where Jesus wants to meet you. Some of you are going to need to go into some tomb time because there's still some more stuff inside you that needs to die. Some of us are going to need to surrender control and dive into the stillness. But I'm telling you, Jesus is available and his eyes are filled with delight. He's cheering you on. Peter went on to tell tens of thousands of people about the Jesus who changed his life. Last week, so many of you took the challenge, the encouragement to post the He is Risen pictures all over town, and now your neighbors know that you believe in Jesus. Can I challenge you, and I'll send some more stuff out about this in the news. Can I challenge you this week to share your story? To share your story on Facebook or Instagram or in an email, cards or notes. Hashtag Jesus changed my life. If you put it on Facebook or Instagram, do hashtag Jesus changed my life. And just a little bit of your story. 2 or 3 minutes about how Jesus changed your life and how somebody else can invite Jesus to change their life.
You pray with me. Jesus, we thank you that you love us, that you see potential in us. And God, even as I've heard Dan preach those words, reminded of how many times I've failed you or betrayed you, and you still loved me, and you still chose to use me in my brokenness. And God, I thank you for the fact that we can be part of a congregation of people that loves like Jesus. And God, I'm thankful for the people that have gotten around me in my failures and spoken life into me. And God, I just pray that you would help us as Christ followers to be able to look at our children, to look at our neighbors. Would you use us to be that voice of hope and encouragement right now, a reminder of your forgiveness, a reminder that you're not done with us yet. In fact, the best is yet to come, that God, you want to bring resurrection out of our failures, that you want to use them to allow us to have a greater impact on our community, on our world, on our neighborhood, and in our homes. So God, some of us, as we hear your words today, would you help us to just truly look into your eyes and to receive them and then have the courage to go out and tell our stories, to live differently? Thank you that my failures are not fatal. Thank you that all of my friends listening today, that their failures are not fatal. Would you help us to go from here now and to love like you would love? In Jesus' name, amen.